Hello, my name is Andia and I'm your host. Welcome to the Quantum Recovery Podcast. I'm a licensed counselor and quantum health coach, and this podcast is all about exploring the new quantum health paradigm. My mission is to simplify the quantum biology practices and principles so you can thrive in your recovery. I'm so happy you're here. And remember, this is for educational purposes only. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Quantum Recovery Podcast. I'm your host, Andia. And today we are going to be talking about post-acute withdrawal. Now, I am quite passionate about this topic because I personally didn't go to like doctors and whatnot in my early recovery or treatment. So I didn't know about post-acute withdrawal and what was going on with my body in my early recovery. For the sake of today, when I say early recovery, I'm talking about the first 2 years. And that is because pause symptoms can happen indefinitely throughout our life, according to Terence Gorski. But we also know that it typically, they last around anywhere from 2 weeks to 2 years. It's a pretty big gap in time, right? I remember learning about this and being like, wow, that's quite a long time. And it can be really intimidating when we're at the beginning of that 2 years, right? So what we're going to talk about today are the exact symptoms. Now, I've already spoken about how blue light toxicity mimics or are the same as some of these symptoms. This is why it's so critical to talk about when we're looking at our quantum recovery or our quantum health, right? Because these symptoms are the same. So if they're the same, then being under blue light at the wrong times of day is only going to exacerbate our symptoms. Especially if we're experiencing them at like a higher, like, you know, on a scale of 1 to 10, we're experiencing them at a 10, let's say. Typically, they are not all at a 10. There are many, many symptoms, and I don't want you to get overwhelmed. But the research around post-acute withdrawal syndrome, there's just not much. And I believe it's because there are so many symptoms. It would be very hard to research something like this. There are some studies out there, though. So I am going to speak in my I statements today. So when I think about withdrawal, like, I used to just automatically go to that place of acute withdrawal. So acute withdrawal, those are signs and symptoms that really begin in the first hours or the days after we stop using a substance. And it resolves over a short period of time, a relatively short period of time. I'll go over different types of drugs and how long that lasts. But, you know, these are alcohol or drug-based symptoms. And we can use all inclusively here, chemical or substance to include, I don't know, sometimes they talk about alcohol and drugs being different, but alcohol is a chemical, it is a substance, it is a drug. So we're talking about everything here. Acute withdrawal, those symptoms are based more physically in our body. We feel sick, right? We don't feel right. Our body is really trying to fight back to get back to homeostasis. Whereas post-acute withdrawal, this implies, right, post being after, syndrome, meaning it's a group of symptoms. We, for short, call this pause. And post-acute withdrawal, these symptoms are actually occurring after acute withdrawal. These are sobriety-based symptoms. They are symptoms that can sometimes be so intense they lead people back to use, right? They return to use. Relapse is another term for it. Now, this group of symptoms of addiction that occur as a result of being abstinent, right, from addictive substances. So these are happening in our sobriety or in our abstinence when we are getting well. Now, different as far as acute withdrawal, the timeframes for just different DOCs or drugs of choice, right? So alcohol is 5 to 7 days. Alcohol also being, you know, alcohol withdrawal, you can die from it. It needs to be clinically managed, that withdrawal. And, you know, of course, this is going to vary whether you're a man or a woman, whether you are, you know, how much you, there's so many variables. Okay. So this is just very rough estimates. Stimulants is 1 to 2 weeks. Cannabis, 5 days. Now, cannabis sits in our, THC sits in our fat. So that cannabis can show up in the sipped in the in the in the system, 30 plus days. I've seen it last in someone's system for 45 days plus here. So it just really depends on the, type of cannabis, and it also depends on how much the person exercises and whatnot, that it stays in the system. But the withdrawal feelings, I have seen them lasting longer than that, 5 days, because the marijuana that's being used nowadays is certainly not the marijuana I was using when I was in my active use. It is much more potent. We are seeing people withdraw and they are going through psychosis. That's typically something we see, with people actively on stimulants. We're seeing that with people who use who where cannabis is their drug of choice. So it's just a different times now. Opiates, that is anywhere, yeah, it's about 2 weeks, but 4 to 10 days is what the research says. But opiates, you're gonna feel like you're gonna die, but it's unlikely that you will die unless there are other like complications. Of course, I'm sure that there could be a person who's died from the withdrawal of opiates, but we have to remember with withdrawal, just think about what the substance does. So whatever a substance does, it withdrawal is going to be the opposite. So what does alcohol do for us? It relieves our anxiety. So what's the withdrawal going to be? It's going to be anxiety. What do stimulants do for us? They keep us awake. So what's the withdrawal going to be like? We're going to go to sleep and we're going to sleep for a while. Opiates, what do opiates do? They numb us. We don't feel anything, right? So when all of those, our system is feeling again, there are a lot of physical symptoms with opiate withdrawal, right? So, and then benzodiazepines, that can be anywhere from 1 to 4 weeks. Now, typically we see people having symptoms like around the 10-day mark. So if someone is using opiates and benzodiazepines, then you are going to actually see that person start to feel better, and then their benzo withdrawal will kick in. So a person using both those substances is going to experience a longer withdrawal time, acute withdrawal time, right? And if they're tapering, it can be even longer than that. So that's just a specific kind of for acute withdrawal. Now, going back to post-acute withdrawal syndrome or PAWS. So this is a biopsychosocial syndrome. We've done damage to our nervous system by using substances. Some of us for decades, we've used substances, and the psychosocial stress of just coping with life and experiencing life-lifing us is going to be uncomfortable. And this, again, it can last anywhere from 2 weeks to 2 years. There's a great researcher, Terence Gorski. He talks a lot about this. You can look up his books on this topic if you're interested. But the intensity of PAWS tends to peak around 3 to 6 months. And he calls these moon cycles. So if you have a 3 to 6 months, you are looking at, think about when you are sober for 30 days and then 45 days and then 60 days. So these, when the pause are really intense at around those times, those are tough times to get through. We see a lot of people return to use. I've seen a lot of people return to use. So these are fewer physical symptoms, but there are some physical symptoms, and I'm going to go over all the symptoms for you in this episode. But really, it's a lot of emotional and psychological symptoms as well. And there are typically, we can think of this in like six categories. So there's difficulty thinking clearly, memory problems, emotional overreaction, or just kind of like feeling numb. And then there's also sleep disturbances. And then there's physical coordination problems that can happen. And then sensitivity to stress. Now, there are many, many symptoms that fall under each of these categories. I'm gonna really talk about the most common ones. So when we're thinking about That difficulty thinking clearly. I think many of us experience this. We can't concentrate. Our thinking, we tend to ruminate. It's just this circular thinking that it goes on and on and on. I remember conversations in my head about things that just aren't even happening, right? And just like really jumping to conclusions. I had a lot of cognitive distortions. Black and white thinking or dichotomous thinking, just all or nothing thinking, it's very common. And just like, you know, our mind just races. Sometimes we have disturbing thought patterns. These things are all fall, those symptoms all fall under that difficulty just having a clear head, right? And then there's memory problems. We can experience loss of short-term memory. That's really the most common. There is long-term memory loss, especially if you're under a lot of stress and you have a low stress tolerance. That is another symptom. And we also can be really forgetful. Now, when we're overreacting, I know that was a huge thing for me. I had a lot of anger issues, so I was very reactive. And just it like the event that was happening that I was reacting to, it was quite there was nothing to be reacting like that to. So we see this overreaction of emotions, right? And then there's also this like numbness that so anhedonia is just kind of feeling like you're not experiencing anything and no joy, no happiness, no sad feelings, no good feelings. It's just like you're kind of blah. Boredom is some people label that as boredom, but it's anhedonia. And you know, we can have times where we're feeling really emotionally overloaded, and it can be something very small that kind of sets that off. And then we have these unpredictable mood swings, like just, you know, it's just random. So that reactivity is very strong, especially in early recovery, the first 2 years. So sleep disturbances. Now, when we talk about light and we're talking about quantum, right? Our light environment is very important. We're getting a lot of different signals from our light environment. It's telling our body what time of day it is. And when we are in early recovery, our sleep is getting, our circadian rhythm is getting back on track. So, you know, a lot of people have difficulty falling asleep or staying asleep. And they just see it's just the patterns of sleep are just sporadic. Nightmares and using dreams, terror, like night terrors are also common, and just like tiredness and fatigue overall. So, you know, for me personally, I was a stimulant user. So think about my poor adrenal glands and how much I was stimulating them. Of course, I felt tons of tiredness and fatigue. That was a huge one for me. You know, it was just huge. There were many times in my active addiction that I would quit and I would always return to use. So I would relapse, right? I would always return to use because I didn't want to feel that tired. For stimulant users, there's this tiredness, like you can't even keep your eyes open. It's a quite intense tiredness. And you know, your body's coming back online, so you might be taking a lot of naps or just like sleeping for really, really long periods of time. And then some people experience just restlessness. And, you know, the physical coordination or more physical symptoms, these can be things like dizziness or balance problems or just kind of being sluggish and your reflexes being sluggish or having impaired hand and eye coordination. I remember experiencing this a little bit, but it didn't, for me, it didn't last that long. And then we're just sensitive to stress. We have a low stress tolerance. And this, you know, we have a difficulty time managing stress if we have a low stress tolerance, right? We typically will not be able to manage, or at least we need a lot of time to get back into a place where we can manage. Now, there are other symptoms that are very common, like anxiety and depression. The irritability that can happen in those mood swings, those unpredictable mood swings, and cravings, right? These things can all lead to cravings, and then our energy levels are just all over the place. One of the things I remember experiencing is just I didn't know what I was feeling. I didn't know how to label my feelings. This is actually called alexithymia. When we can't label our feelings, when we don't know what we are feeling. So, you know, that is, it's really important that when you're experiencing a feeling, think about what you're feeling. because that's the language of our subconscious mind. And when we are in recovery, we want to start changing those underlying beliefs, like all that negative self-talk, because it's just such a self-loathing disease. We want to switch all of that. So how are we going to switch it if we're not labeling our feelings? This is huge. If I can give you a takeaway today, like start labeling your feelings, even if they're simple ones, like, oh, I feel so happy right now. Or, oh, I'm feeling so much joy. Or, I'm so grateful right now. Or maybe we're pissed off and we're angry. Just label that and allow the feeling to pass. And remember, your thoughts are there, or your feelings, they're not permanent. Like, they're not, it's not something that you're gonna. Some of the negative feelings, I know I struggled with this. I would get really like down in this like pity party thinking like this feeling is never going to change. And because it was so intense. But when we can label it, it gives our brain context, it allows us to process it. So labeling even the simplest feelings can get you to a place where you are feeling better. That you're able, if you're feeling more confident in labeling what's going on. So, of course, if we don't, and I hope that this episode today didn't overwhelm you, but what I want to say is that there are going to be times when you're experiencing some of these things and they'll be out of 10, right? But there are also going to be other ones you experience maybe regularly that are going to be low. Typically, a person isn't going to be a 10 on every single one of these symptoms. And also, not every single person experiences all of these symptoms. We are all so unique. Remember, N equals one. We are it's our own self that is in the experience. Go by your own feelings. If you are in re early recovery and you're listening to this, having a therapist and talking to your therapist about these symptoms is important, and having a place to talk about it, because there, I know for me, there was a lot of shame and guilt. I thought these things were per I didn't even know that there was a term for what I was experiencing. I just thought I was permanently broken. So today's episode is all about making sure nobody's feeling permanently broken. I mean, I can't tell you how to feel, but I want to lessen the overwhelm when it comes to these symptoms, but I'm going to be talking about these symptoms on my platform because our light environment is really, really critical here. Remember, some of these symptoms, many of these symptoms are the same symptoms as blue light toxicity. So if you are scrolling your phone or getting that blue light at the wrong times of day, it will exacerbate your pause symptoms. This is, something that we really have to start looking at, and I don't think we talk about it enough. So I've given you some resources, and if the some resources, and if this hasn't is maybe the first episode you might be listening to, go back and listen to some of those other episodes where I talk about more details about light environment. And I'll be talk, you know, we'll be discussing that a lot, but I'm not going to quit talking about light. Light is such a critical piece of our health. The healing of our mitochondria is really a light story. It really is. And our recovery is there's a we have to talk about our light environment. I've already been helping people and teaching them this information, and they are seeing such dramatic results just in 30 days of changing their light practices, their light environment, just doing simple things like switching out light bulbs. Or wearing blue blockers. It just is such a profound effect on your sleep. And I know sleep was such a huge one that I saw people struggle with. So if that is you, blue blockers and light bulbs are key. And I will put some links in the show notes for resources. And all of my quantum pages are always in the resources. I built the quantum pages basically as a journal of things I have found along my journey that I trust these companies. Some of them I'm an affiliate of, some of them I am not. There is no, you get a discount typically if I am an affiliate. So good. That is good for you. I often supported the people who taught me about this stuff by using their affiliate links. That's how I showed them support and thanked them for learning and being exposed to this material. So I hope this helps you. I hope that you don't have to go on a random searches to search for some of these products, because there are pretty simple, very low cost things that we can buy, like a pair of blue blockers, that will really have a huge impact on our health. And when it comes down to it, health is wealth. Health, it are it, you can have all the money in the world, and if you're not feeling good, it doesn't matter. And we are all on this healing journey in our recovery, and we can lower the symptoms of post-acute withdrawal by looking at our light environment. It is a huge, huge piece. So thank you so much for listening today, and I will talk to you next week. Bye-bye. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you found value in this information, and if you did, please share it. Another way to support the podcast is to leave a 5-star review. If you want to connect, you can message me on Instagram or email me at andiaray@outlook.com. And remember, drink water.